Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You know, I always said, there's so many years no one gave a shit about me. How can I be anything but nice about it?
Hello, welcome back. You are listening to me, Christoph Triumph, and this is the podcast Varvet International. This episode is part of the 2016 binge listening experience. That means that this interview was recorded in 2015, but due to personal issues for me, it's not been released until now, almost a year later. Anyhow, in this episode, my guest is a very funny actor, a comedian from Illinois. I'm talking about Jim O'Hare. Jim started his career by performing in the legendary improv school, the Second City in Chicago, but for many people, he is best known for his appearances in the NBC comedy series Parks and Recreation and the Comedy Central sitcom Strip Mall. Today, Jim lives in a house in California together with his beloved dogs. This interview was recorded in West Hollywood, so let's just roll the tape, shall we? Here is Jim O'Hare. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. I'm really good. I worked all weekend, so I got to sleep in today, so that was nice.
What did you do?
I did a film called Middleman that I shot. We started in the end of May, and we finished it by the end of June. So we did some pickup shots, you know, just some stuff that they hadn't gotten. But it's funny because it's a very dark, dark, dark comedy, and there's blood and there's murder and all this kind of stuff, and my character gets blood on him a lot. And so yesterday, I was like, oh, here I go again. And they've squirted all sorts of blood on me and dirt and filth. But it's over. We have officially wrapped it. Now it's in the editing booths and they can do whatever they're going to do. But it's I think it's a pretty cool film. What's good for me is, you know, I'm known mostly for Jerry from Parks and Recreation, this sweet, lovable, doofus kind of guy. And this character is not. This guy is, it gets really dark.
Okay.
It gets really dark. But it's good because, you know, you want to let people know, hey, I can do other stuff, you know. Because what happens is, especially when you're on a show for 7 years, you know, you can get labeled like, oh, he's that guy. He just does the nice dude, the whatever. So this film was, it was a good opportunity for me to say, no. I'm an actor. I can do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I've seen some of the dailies, and it looks really good. And some of the acting, Andrew J. West from Walking Dead is amazing. He's kind of my co-lead. And Josh McDermott, also from Walking Dead, incredible. Ann Dudek from Mad Men. I mean, we ended up with this incredible cast. And it's a low-budget film, so nobody made a lot of money off of it. But it's amazing. The script was so strong, everybody just wanted in. And that says a lot, you know. And I think, because you can have a great script and it doesn't work when you go to shoot it. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, maybe poor direction, maybe poor, a million things can happen to make it not work. I think this works. From what I've seen, I think it works. So now I'm just dying to sit and see a finished product, but that'll be months away because...
But it's coming out in 2015.
Right? They're trying to hit the festivals, but they wanted to get it. I think the deadline for Sundance, I believe, is the end of September. So the goal is to have it at least a clean copy by the end of September. The thing is that people don't realize there is so much to do in post-production. It has to be colorized, which means every scene has to be manually manipulated in sound, there has to be a score written, you know, so now there's a, you know, a composer out there who's writing a score. So it all takes time.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It takes time. So, you know, and it's not like it's a big studio where you can throw $1 million at it and have this happen and that happen. You know, they just have to do what they can do. But the director feels that we'll be ready for the festival. So that would be great.
That's fantastic.
I think we'll do good in the festivals.
When is Sundance?
It doesn't actually happen till January, okay. But they have to have submissions, which, you know, and there's not just Sundance. There's Tribeca. I mean, there's big ones, but Sundance is kind of the mecca of all indie stuff. Yeah. That's where you want to go. Or Slam Dance. That would be great, too. So we'll see. It's...
Have you been to Sundance?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It is.
Yes. It is. I went for, again, the show Parks that I was on 2 Sundances ago. Almost every one of us were involved in a film that was going to be showing at Sundance. And our producers were so amazing because it was happening during a work week. But they scheduled us all to make it work so that we could all go over there. So, like, Aubrey and I were in the same film, so I think they gave us the first 3 days off, and then Amy at the end, and Nick Offerman, and Adam Scott. They just really amazing. So we were all there. What's cool about Sundance and the big festivals, the fans, they're the diehard film fans, the diehard TV fans. So these are people who are really invested. Because a lot of stuff you go to, it's just, you know, it can just be people who are just excited to see a celebrity or something.
Yeah.
And they're excited to see celebrities, too. Like, I never expected it to be crazy for me. And Nick Offerman had said, it's going to get crazy when you get over there, because he had been there a couple times. I said, oh, I don't think so. Well, it was crazy. Like, at one point, the police had to help me get across the street. But I also learned, here's my favorite story. So I get there, and I had to go pick up some tickets for something. So I just went and walked over to this place. Well, somebody screamed, oh, my God, it's Jim O'Hare from Parks or whatever. So all of a sudden, these people start coming around. Well, now we're in the middle of the street, so the police move us over and help me out. And then the crowd kept growing because people were saying, he's taking pictures and all this stuff. And I'm having kind of a Beatles moment, like, wow, my God, these people are all want my picture and autograph or whatever. And then somebody yells, oh, my God, it's Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
These people left me so fast. I mean, 1 second, I am totally surrounded, and 2 seconds later, I am all by myself. And he's walking, and he's got, like, what appeared to be security or something. No one was getting near him. So once they realized they weren't going to get him, of course, they all come back to me. I'm like, oh, no, I get how this works.
Yeah.
Film is up here, TV's down here. So, but it's a really fun experience. The audience, you learn the tricks. Like when you go to a premiere there, if the audience stays, your movie did well. Otherwise, they get up and leave, even if there's a Q&A afterward. I mean, it's very specific. And then the parties are either congratulatory parties or this isn't going to go anywhere parties.
Okay.
Because from what I understand, they immediately start bidding. You know, the different production companies or studios start bidding on these films. And some films, you know, don't get bid on. And so then you have a sad party.
Yeah.
Luckily, I was in a film with Aubrey called Life After Beth, a zombie film. And the audience stayed, and it went into bidding that night. So our party was a happy party.
Yeah,
we were happy. But it's an exciting place. I was there for probably 4 days. So many parties. Even parties that you're not invited to, but if they see you walking down the street, like, come in to our, you know, like, so... It was great. And I saw people I hadn't seen in a while, which is fun, you know. So, yeah, Sundance is – it's the goal. It's if you can get into Sundance, it can change everything for your film.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And it helps to have names, you know, and our film has a couple, like I said, a couple of the Walking Dead guys. That's good. That can help. So we'll see. I don't know. We were hoping to get Chris Pratt was going to do a small part in the film. Scheduling, it couldn't happen. That would have been awesome. But it's so funny because when you everything plays out how it's supposed to. Because some of the casting things were going to be different at first. And just the way it all played out, it's perfect. I really feel it's perfect.
It feels like all of you guys from Parks and Rec have sort of skyrocketed.
Oh, and that I mean, Chris Pratt has skyrocketed. My God, the man is the number one box office dude. But yeah, everyone is like, we still constantly text each other and stuff. You know, we have the... It's called the Parks thing and on my phone. And Aubrey texted all of us the other day. She's in Hawaii filming a movie. Retta's doing Girl's Guide to Divorce for Bravo. Adam just finished a film in New Zealand. Nick, he's on Fargo. He's got him and his wife just did a show that they ran over the summer called Summer of 69, no apostrophe. Yeah, everybody, Aziz, his new show is going to start soon, his Netflix show. Yeah, it's amazing what being, because I had never had the experience. I've been on shows before, but never. We did 125 of them. That's a lot, you know. And so that exposure, it changes everything. It really changes everything. And like I have, since Parks ended, thankfully, I have pretty much been working nonstop. And it's been mostly offers, you know, where your manager calls or agent calls and says, listen, you've been offered this. Well, that didn't happen before Parks. You know, that just didn't.
Yeah.
Parks was the game changer.
You don't have to go to that many auditions.
Not as many.
No.
But that being said, I am all about it. Like, I am not, because there's some actors at some point won't audition. Not me. If it's a good role and I want it, hell yeah, I'll go in there. I have no problem with that. And I'm also one of the crazy actors. I like auditioning. It doesn't bother me. Like some actors, it just, they hate it. They get nervous. To me, it's another way of performance. I don't know. And I like to perform, I guess. So for me, it's great. I recently auditioned for a Clint Eastwood film that I think might happen. So that would be great. But yeah.
Was he in there?
No, he's not. Here's how Clint does it. He casts off of tape, off of the audition tape. He does not, he's not in the room. And I know people that have worked with him who met him first day on set. So we got the call that things went well. And I'm at this point, his choice for the role.
Oh,
it's kind of a
knock on wood.
Yeah. Knock on. Yeah. If I can knock on something, you never know. But you know, also I've been around long enough to know that until they call with an offer, nothing is solid, you know, but it would be great. It would be awesome just to, cause I've heard nothing but great stuff. People love working with him. His sets are, from what I understand, very peaceful. You know, he doesn't shoot the hell out of anything. He gets what he likes, and he moves on. Yeah. So that's why he's always under budget. Because I've been on stuff that they just shoot it to death. And by the end, your actors have lost their freshness for the scene. And, the word is he just does a couple. You got it. Let's move on. Mm. So that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we've all done – everyone is working, which – it's good and bad. It's bad because we don't get to see each other. Everyone's all over the place. But we were nominated for an Emmy this year, so everybody will see each other at the Emmys. So that'll be great. So, yeah, we'll see. You know, we were shocked because we haven't been nominated for the past 3 years. So, to be honest, it wasn't even on my radar. Like, I woke up that morning, and, you know, you grab your phone, and you're looking like, what the hell's going on? Like, all this congratulations. I had no idea what people were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a message from my publicist. You guys got nominated. I go, what? So it was great, though, because it's our swan song. You know, it's our last. And the odds are we won't win. Modern Family has won the past 5 or 6 years. They'll probably win again. But it's nice for our final season to get that.
Of course.
To get to be together. And, yes, it's great. We're excited.
I had two thoughts before sitting down with you. The first was that I would tell you that we would see how long we could go without mentioning Parks and Rec. that failed right off
immediately.
The bat.
That's yeah, exactly. Over. Yes, but that was my fault. I brought it up, not you.
It was, but anyway. And the other thing was that I would like to talk to you about Harris Whittles.
Yeah, now,
he passed away like 4 or 5 days before the final episode, right?
Yeah. It was the week. Yeah. Shocking. You know, we all knew Harris had his struggles. So that part, I guess, whatever. But the shocking part was he was clean. Like, and everyone knew that. He was doing great. He was doing amazing.
And he was so happy about the new job and so forth.
He was doing, he's a brilliant guy. So it was shocking. That's all I can tell you. I was doing an episode of Hot in Cleveland. And there was a text from Pratt, I think, and he was like, what the fuck happened? And I knew, I go, oh, no, what's happening? So then I immediately jump in. I go, what do you guys talk? Because then there was something from Amy and da-da-da. I said, what is going on? And Amy texted me, and she just said, Harris died. I was like, oh, my God. I don't know. I have never, everyone has demons or whatever, and we all have our issues. I can't imagine the curse of that, of a drug addiction. I can't imagine. Thankfully, I've never had any interest in that. because maybe I would have been super addicted to. I have no idea. But it was shocking when you know people who have done drugs and have had issues. He had been, done a couple of rehabs here and there. You think, well, anything can happen. But he was so good. He was in such a great place. He was playing with his band, and we were wrapping up parks, and he was just so much great stuff and so much opportunity. So it was shocking. It was shocking. And then the outpouring of love and support, and it's a shame, and I know we can say it about a million different people, but it was a real waste because he was super, super smart, funny guy. But what I will also say, more importantly than any of that, he was a good guy. He was a great guy. He had a big heart. He was not a, I don't know, that whole drug thing, I can't imagine. So I don't know what to say, but it was horrible.
Yeah, he seemed, you know, with Twitter and all social media, it's like everybody's like, oh, that and that person passed away. And I'm always like, okay, but she was like 85.
Right, but, which is sad, but
yeah, of course.
85,
yeah.
Right.
But Harris Whittles, I mean,
early 30s.
Yeah, it really, I took it to heart, even not knowing him, just knowing some of his work, and like, he was constantly on top of my want list for the podcast.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, boy. And he was also, you know, he was a big Fish fan, the group.
Yeah.
The group. And, you know, he was, boy, when he was passionate about something, he was passionate.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say who, because I don't want to put words in someone else's mouth, but someone he was very close to said to me, she's a comedian, and she said she had literally just seen him 2 days earlier. And he was great. So
doing stand-up or?
No, he was at her house.
Okay.
You know, and she said so. I mean, she was so shocked because she had just seen him, you know, and she said, because she knew him for a lot of years, and she knew the signs when things weren't going well with him as far as, you know, you change physically if you're doing some hardcore stuff. And she said he looked great. She has her theory on what happened. She thinks he did a gig and he was talking about his addictions and something clicked in his head and he thought, because, you know, he was about to head to New York.
Yeah.
And he even, and this was all over the internet.
He was going to work with the new Aziz show, right?
Right, Aziz's show. And he was also, like, he had one of his buddies put this information out online after he died. He had tweeted, you know, he had sent him a message saying, dude, I'm going to New York. I'm going to need some help when I get there. Like, in other words, some meetings, you know, set me up on where I need to be. And the guy was like, great, yeah, I know, great, you know. So he had every intention of being clean and sober. So something went wrong.
Yeah.
I don't believe for a second, I don't think anybody believes he OD'd on purpose. I think it was my theory, what the hell do I know? It was one of his last nights in L.A., and he thought, I'm going to have one final whatever, and it went too far, obviously. Mm. So, but heartbreaking. And his family, so sweet, and the mother and the sister, everybody, I don't know, just awful.
But can I ask you, did you have much to do with him?
I didn't socially other than at parties and stuff, but at work, you know, every week you do your table reads. And the way the Parks worked, and not every show does this, but the way Parks does it, if you were the writer of the episode, you were on set the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there were weeks when we were all together all the time.
Yeah.
Because what they loved doing on the show was we could yell out, you know, is there a better line for this or whatever? So if the writer's there, everybody can throw it out and, you know, whatever. So, oh, yeah, Harris was – and plus Harris played a couple of – you know, he was one of the characters on the show. So, yeah, we got a lot of time with him on set. I knew at one point he had disappeared for a while and he was in, you know, went to a rehab somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
There were no more supportive people than the producers on Parks because they loved him to death. So I know that he could have done anything to get help and they would have gone along with it if he needed time off, if he needed whatever. So, yeah. So, but yeah, if it was his episode, he was on set every day the whole time. So, yeah, it was great. It's still like I do this weird little nightly prayer to all these anyway. And he's in, you know, for people that have passed in my life, and he's on the list now. And I hate that. I hate that he's on the list.
Of course.
But he is.
I wanted to ask you about Jerry, of course. I mean, when you came to one of those, first off, I was a huge fan of Parks and Rec. And it feels like for me from the outside that perhaps your part was the most interesting in a way, because coming to a table read, did you ever know what to expect?
Never.
Exactly.
Never. And that's what I loved.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I never knew. Jerry, you know, I don't know if you know what happened, how Jerry even happened, but when the show was cast, it was six main characters. It was Amy Poehler, Nick Offerman, Aziz Ansari, Paul Schneider, who was there for the first, I think, 30 episodes. He played Mark Brandanowitz. Aubrey Plaza. Is that six?
That was
and Rashida Jones, of course. So this was it. That was the game. And so when I got called to even audition for it, they said, you know, they wanted me to audition for Ron Swanson. Could you imagine anybody other than Nick Offerman playing Ron Swanson? But
since I read that you were, I couldn't see you doing
it. Well, I mean, I had a different take on it. It was, I don't know, I'm so enamored with Nick's work
that
I can't imagine.
I love it.
I just can't imagine, yeah. And this, I'll say, I'll jump this in here too, because we mentioned the Emmys earlier. You know, I've been a TV guy my whole life, and I watch the award shows and all that crap, but the fact that Nick Offerman has never been nominated for the role of Ron Swanson makes no sense.
No.
In any real world, it makes no sense. Mm. Just saying that. I'm glad we're nominated as a show. I'm glad Amy's nominated, because of course she deserves that. But the fact that Nick Offerman has not been nominated for such a very specific character, like nothing else on television like Ron Swanson.
Mm-hmm.
And not to knock anyone else who has been nominated over him, but you know, there's very few are doing what he did for seven seasons.
Yeah.
So that's just my high horse.
Yeah.
And now I'll get off. But so, yeah, so then when Jerry came along, you know, the thing that changed everything for Jerry, and I just ran into this guy the other night, 2 weeks ago, Dan Gore was one of our exec producers who now co-created Brooklyn Nine-Nine with Michael Short. So, and I just ran into him. But we were doing an episode where people were finding out dirt on each other, and they found, my character ends up, I find out that I was adopted. I never even knew it. And apparently that's when they realized that's who Jerry is. He's going to be the guy who's just not always in the loop, you know. Mm. And I'd like to think I would have stayed either way. You know, they would have found something for me. But that changed it. Because then Mike Schur, who co-created with Greg Daniels the show, will always tell you, it got so crazy in the writer's room. It was constant Jerry jokes, like slamming Jerry. And at some point, like, okay, it can't just be about slamming Jerry, you know. So it was great. It was great. And I get so many people, I feel so bad for your character. How can they be so mean to you and stuff? But I always say, if you're a diehard fan of the show, if you really watch the episodes, whenever Jerry needed them, they were there. He was their punching bag, no doubt. If a joke was going to be played, it was going to be played on Jerry.
Yeah.
But when Jerry needed them, there was an episode when Adam Scott and Rob Lowe first come into Parks. They're going to cut the budget. So they have to cut. And Adam's character, Ben, says, well, what about this Jerry Gergich? And right away, Leslie, oh, no, we can't do it without him. So, I mean, they were always, I don't know, they were always there when he needed them, they were always there. So I don't look at it like that. And also, Jerry knew what was important in life, family.
Yeah.
And to him, that was his job. He went there, he made his money, he was going to get his retirement. But ultimately, he went home to the most beautiful woman in the world and these three beautiful daughters.
Yeah.
And he had a big dick, as we learned in season three.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's such a fantastic part. And it was such a fantastic series. And I mean, do you feel like you're going to experience something as good as Parks and Rec again?
Sadly, I don't think so. And I'm not even basing that on quality, because that would be tough to match. But there is... It's never that I've ever heard of, certainly that I've ever been involved in, there's never been a group of people who got along so well. And I'm not just talking the actors. Our crew, our producers, I mean, I still go for ribs and beer with the camera crew. I mean, these people, you're with them a lot. I've been on other shows, and there can be a lot of tension. There can be a lot of this one's sniping about that one. I never, in 125 episodes, never heard a raised voice on set. Never a raised voice. I never heard an actor slam another actor. Now, actors are snarky. You know, oh, well, why did she do this? Or how did he get that? Why is he on Leno? Or why is he on Letterman and I'm not? Blah, blah. None of it. None of it happened. And Amy says it, and she's right. It was lightning in a bottle, because it just happened. That was just these group of people got together. It wasn't planned that we'd all get along. You always hope for that. So could it happen again? I guess anything can happen. I sadly think no. And again, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope I get on another show where I am as equally happy. But our show was so awesome. It sounds crazy, but like we shot single camera, which meant some days you didn't work because it's not like a multi-camera. You have the big audience and you rehearse all day and then do your audience. So I would get the schedule the week before on a Friday. I'd get my work schedule the next week. And if it said like I was off Thursday, I'd be like, oh, damn. I'm off on Thursday. Like, I want to be there.
Mm.
I really wanted to be there. So it's great when you have a job that you want to be at. Like, I was down the days I wasn't there. I was like, I wish I was on set today.
Mm.
So I think that's rare. And it's because, this is the oldest saying in the book, you know, it starts at the top. Mike Schur and Amy Poehler, Mike set an amazing tone upstairs in the writer's rooms, and Amy set an amazing tone downstairs on the sound stages. I mean, how can you be crabby and bitchy when your lead actress is being so kind and funny and generous? And during Parks, she went through some stuff. She went through her divorce. I mean, it's not like it was all, you know, roses and everything every day. You would never know it, because when she hit that set, the smile was on her face. Everybody appreciated that everybody has to be here to make this happen. So if you're my stand-in, you're as important as me and is the crafty guy and the script supervisor and we all were on the same page. So,
but that feels sort of unique, right?
Because I've been around. Very unique. There are sets, and I won't say which ones. There's one major hit show right now that I have a friend who's been recurring on it, and he called his representatives and said, never again. I won't do another episode.
Mm.
The set is that bad. So to think that we had this total opposite.
I'm trying to figure out which one.
Oh, there's a million shows. Yeah, you'll never figure it out. Maybe I'll tell you off microphone.
I actually heard that there's going to be, when this year is finished, there's going to be 400 original TV series aired in the U.S.
400?
400.
Wow.
Well, not aired, because some of it is online. But
sure,
still,
sure.
Yeah,
400.
Yeah.
Which is great for actors.
It is. It means, of course.
I'm working on a film right now, and it's specifically for the producers, Larry Levinson. He has bought Pixel. It's on DirecTV. He bought this thing. So now he's just producing content. So it's really a good time for actors.
Yeah.
It really is a good time for actors.
But do you get paid?
Yeah, it depends on the gig. Like the one I'm doing now, I'm doing a film called A Moving Romance. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. Financially, it's a good one. And so far, I just started it last week. And so far, it's been great. The people are awesome. But yeah, no, and also, you know, once you've done a certain amount of work, they're not going to approach you unless they have a decent offer to make.
Yeah.
Though, that being said, there are independents like Middleman that I did. That was $100 a day. All these amazing actors did it for $100 a day, but that was because of the script. Everybody knew it was a special script.
Yeah.
And you want to be involved. You know, we're actors. We want to be involved in special scripts. We want a character that is so different that we want to play it. So we will do that for $100 a day. And you can do it because, you know, like with Parks, you know, we did 125 episodes. We're in syndication. So, you know, my bills are paid. So then you can do those kind of jobs and love it.
But does that mean that you, because when syndication, I'm not sure how that works. I understand that you sort of, the show gets pleased.
Yeah, no, syndication, basically, it's been sold, which means each and every episode is sold, they go in cycles, so it can be sold for, you know, 3 years, 5 years, I don't know all the numbers. And then it's on different, you know, it's like if you turn on your television, you can't, you know, every time you turn, there's a Big Bang Theory, there's a Roseanne is still on every channel, Will and Grace. So these are out there forever. The money gets less and less the longer it's out there. And basically, the way it's been working, we've been out there for a year now, maybe a year and a half. I feel like every 3 months, so maybe every quarter, you get a check.
Okay.
And they're lovely. Our syndication deal isn't like some of the big syndication deals don't really happen anymore because there's so much content. There's so many shows. So we didn't get like a Roseanne kind of syndication deal, but it's lovely. And it's for an actor, you know, the way it works for actors and I assume, certainly in the U.S., We have AFTRA and SAG. SAG-AFTRA is our union. And so I could make $100 million this year. And if next year I don't make anything, I lose my insurance. So you have to make certain amounts. So the nice part about syndication is even if you have a bad year, if you take a year off, you'll have that money coming in. It's applied to your insurance. You get to keep your insurance. So it's just a nice thing in your back pocket.
Of course, you know,
it's not like our syndication deal is not one that, you know, means I can sit and not work ever again, but it means that if there are some slow times, it'll be okay because that still comes in.
Yeah, but I mean, if you make, you just told me that you're going to make 100 million.
Well, that's just for one day's work.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just for one day. So over the year, that means I'll be about 3 billion.
Okay. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Oh, no, it's just how it is.
But is pilot season coming up now, or when is that?
No, pilot season is like end of January through March.
Okay.
Kind of, yeah. So I had my first pilot season this past one for the first time in.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Because you've been on Parks and Rec.
Yeah. It's great, and it was weird.
During Parks and Rec, you didn't go to pilots?
You can't, because
okay.
You are under contract.
Right.
Our contracts are for six seasons, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And more importantly, you couldn't have dragged me away from Parks. Mm. I mean, it's a place I wanted to be every day, so there would have been no issue. No, you are under contract, and it's great. When you're an actor and you don't have to think about pilot season, it's awesome because you got a gig.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing better. Years ago, before Parks happened, I had a friend who was on a series, and he used to say the best part was that during the summer, before things started shooting again, he knew he had a job to go back to. And that really is nice. So if you're having a lazy day and you're like, oh, man, I should be looking for the, you go, oh, wait, no, I have a job. I don't go back to work till the end of July, but I do have a big job. So that was great. But so this last pilot season was my first one in 6-7 years or whatever it was. It was different, though, because, and only because of Parks and Rec, I basically went to the final test. I didn't have to do a lot of the pre-stuff. So if there was a role that they liked me for, I would go to what's called, you'd go to the network audition. So studio and then network. So that made it easier. I didn't land anything, but it was nice. It was good. And I'm a specific type. I'm a character. I'm a big guy. So I'm not going to be up for everything. But that being said, I think character actors have it better. We have it easier. You know, the good looking dudes and, you know, the leading men, there's so much competition. I mean, so much competition. I'm allowed to get old. I'm allowed to get gray. Like right now, people can't see me, but my hair is brown for a film. In general, it's gray. At first, when I started to go gray at 30, people were like, you need to color your hair. You don't want people to think you're getting older. But when you're a character actor in LA, you're allowed to get older.
Yeah.
The grayer I got, the busier I got. All of a sudden, I was a judge, and I was a lawyer, and I was a doctor. So for me, I love being a character actor. I'm also not the guy. I have never been the guy. Not that I would turn it down, but I don't want the Jim O'Hare show. I love an ensemble show. That's, again, about Parks. Everything goes back to Parks because there were 8 of us. And so everything, it's not just on one person. And the odds are that's how I'll be cast. I'll be in an ensemble. It's my favorite thing because I love the back and forth. You know, because people were, after Parks was ending, like, oh, wouldn't you love a spinoff of the Jerry? No, 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 no. Now, if it was offered, would I try it? I guess I'd be a fool not to try, but that's not a goal. That was never a goal, to have my own show.
It's also strange. I mean, I can't really picture. Can you picture the Jerry Gergich show?
I can't picture a spinoff of any of us. And the reason I say that is all these characters are so fun in little spurts. Like even Ron Swanson, who I adore. Is 30 minutes of Ron Swanson a lot every week? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Jerry at home with his family and him. That's a lot every week.
Ron Swanson is almost best in a, you know, a GIF.
Yes. It's awesome. And that's, again, with all, even Aziz Ansari, you know, he played Tom Haverford. Can you have that 30 minutes every week? I really don't think so.
No.
I think it was perfect as it was.
Yeah.
I really do. So, but again, if someone said tomorrow, listen, we're going to do a Jim O'Hare happy, wacky comedy show, I certainly would try, but it's never been a goal. It's never been a goal. The dream is, a lot of actors dream about. If you're a theater guy, and I am a theater guy, the dream is get on a show, let it run for years, and then let it go into syndication. And then you have freedom to do kind of what you want, which a lot of times is to go back to theater. So I was blessed. That dream kind of happened. You know, so actually I'm going to do a theater project soon. So
here in L.A.?
No, in Kansas City.
Okay.
I committed for 3 months. Yow! It's an old play called You Can't Take It With You, and it's just a sweet old play, and I'm super excited. But I couldn't have done that before because the temptation of TV money is different than theater money. It's just different. But because of Parks and because of syndication and other work I've done that's out there, and, you know, I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, and also it's better because of Parks, this theater, you know, they are paying me more than the average actor would be getting. It's all lovely, you know, and so it kind of worked out. It just kind of worked out.
Do you have a family?
No. Well, yeah, but not wife and kids.
Okay.
I have dogs and brothers and sisters and nieces and stuff like that. So I also have freedom to come and go.
Yeah.
Which is awesome too. Like literally in the past 2 weeks, I was shooting in LA. I wrapped at 10 o'clock one night. The next morning, 6:30, I was on a plane to Florida. I shot there. The following Wednesday, I got off a plane at LAX, and the new show that I'm doing picked me up to take me to set. So it's a lot of gone time. But that's the nature of the business. It is what it is. So, and now I'm heading to, you know, Kansas City for 3 months.
Yeah.
It's tough to do with the family. People do it. People do it.
But yeah.
It's tough. I think it's tough.
How is Kansas City? Have you been there before?
I have never. This is going to be interesting.
Okay.
It's all going to be. I'm doing something I've never done. And I had said to my agents, you know, I'd love to get back and to do some theater. Well, of course, in my head, I'm thinking, put me on Broadway. That's what I want. And so this offer came in, and my initial thought was, well, no, because they wanted me all of September, October, November. And I was like, well, no, that's my crazy busy time. I can't be gone. But then I realized, well, yeah, it's crazy busy because I've been in Parks and Recreation the past 7 years. So now it's not. Who knows if it'll be crazy busy. So then you go back and forth on the negotiations and everything. And finally they made a deal, and they were so generous as far as my time. Like if this Clint Eastwood thing happens, I can come back for it. If I have a charity thing I'm involved with, I have to go to Washington, I can go. They really were very generous in allowing me to do other things during it. So, you know, there'll be an understudy for me and stuff. So it seemed like this was meant to happen.
Yeah.
Because every time I came up with a hurdle that I thought, oh, they're not going to be happy if we ask for this, because they would come back, okay. And so it just seemed like, okay,
fantastic.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to be in a play for 3 months. It's such a sweet old play. It was on Broadway last year with James Earl Jones and Rose Byrne. So that's kind of brought it back into the limelight, I guess. And I play a guy who's kind of obsessed with fireworks, so I get to blow some stuff up. And so yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. And plus theater is so, so immediate. You know, you go out there, there it is. There's the people, and there you are.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. It's exciting and different every night, which is fun about theater. And when you do a show here in LA, first of all, your agents are always a little negative about theater because they're like, well, you know, it'll take you away from this or that. So I'm really happy that I have the kind of people around me who, when I said, I really would love to do some theater, they're like, okay, we'll make it happen. And they did. So I'm very appreciative of that.
But how about the theater scene here in LA? You don't see much of it.
It's terrible. It really is. And now they've changed. Recently, this new thing passed for non-equity houses. The little theaters can't afford to stay open.
Okay.
Because sadly, people don't support little theater in LA. They just don't. People are going to go to the Mark Taper Forum. They're going to go downtown. I mean, they're going to go to the, you know, if Hairspray is at the Pantages, they're going to go see that. That Wicked, that'll all do fine. But your little theaters, like I cut my teeth in Chicago theater, where there was a black box theater in every block, but people went.
Yeah.
People went and saw your stuff. It's tough here. It is tough to get an audience. I mean, if you have a big name in it, I'm sure it's easier. But the shame of it is there's some amazing work being done. I mean, some really amazing work that will never be seen.
But it's so strange with LA because people tell me that there's not much TV being shot here either. It's all moved to Canada.
And yet we just passed the new law. I don't know why it ever changed, where they're going to get some incentives to come back.
Okay.
So I do think it will change. But yeah, it's been, North Carolina has been huge. And now North Carolina, and this makes no sense to me, they just turned their laws around so they're not getting incentives anymore. It's, in other words, they're basically saying go away.
Okay.
But I don't understand it. It brings in tons of money.
Of course.
Because you're not just having, this production leads to people living there, people shopping, people eating. I don't understand it. But we are now coming back to, they're giving incentives. But sure, Vancouver, Atlanta, everything is Atlanta now. New Orleans, there's shows shooting. Chicago, finally, where I'm from, finally has two or three different shows shooting there. So yeah, no, it's changed. It's definitely changed. I do think more is coming back though. Because there's still, you know, there's still, my God, there's CBS Radford stages, there's Fox, there's Sony, there's Warner Brothers. There's still a lot of things shooting here. But a lot of it went bye-bye.
My question is basically, I mean, I guess young actors, I mean, if you go buy coffee or something, it's going to be a striving actor cleaning the
yes,
table.
Yes, still. It is. Yes, it is.
But during a really long time, there's been really no work for perhaps auditions here still, or?
Yeah, no, you would audition here, but then the work would go elsewhere.
All right.
And also, and this, I don't think that this is going to change anytime soon. Here's an example, like even during pilot season, when they put out in the breakdowns, the casting directors will put out a breakdown, which is telling the agents, here's what we're looking for. They will be specific in those breakdowns and say, we want someone who's already on a show. Like, what? That's crazy. Mm. You know, but everyone wants the already famous kind of people. So it's tougher for your newbie. But you also want to say, look at some of the shows that they've put famous people in that have collected, you know, Robin Williams, who's, my God, brilliant, to say the least. His show lasted one season. So it doesn't guarantee anything. And yet these networks keep throwing tons of money at big names. You know what? Just get good quality product and put decent actors in it. You'll be okay.
Yeah.
But no, it's tough. That being said, if it's your passion, you have no choice. I had no choice. Have you heard of Second City? It's
family. Yeah.
I can tell you the second it happened, I went there, I took a class, I was on stage, and I got a laugh. And I remember, like, whoa, that's awesome. Because it was an improv, so it came out of my head.
Yeah. You know?
And I thought, that's awesome. And I remember after class, you know, we went out for some beers. And I remember saying to people, well, this is what I'm going to do forever. Not thinking I could make a living doing it, but I knew I needed to do this.
Yeah.
This is really cool. You know, be on stage, be in front of people. And so thankfully I was able to do it and make a living off of it.
Yeah.
You know, because the shame of the thing about LA is talent does not always win the day. I have friends who are so talented, who could act circles around me, who can't even get an agent. It's not a fair city. It's just not a fair city. I don't know how to change that. I don't know how to make it better.
What does it come down to then? Is it
I think
contact?
There's luck involved. Like, you know, and the thing about, like with Parks, before Parks, I was always busy. I was very blessed. I went from guest spot to guest spot. I would get a pilot. That wouldn't go anywhere. I had a series on Comedy Central for a little while. So I was fine. Parks changes that because now you get the weekly exposure and that changes stuff.
You go from fine to
like
very good.
People calling you and giving you offers without even, you know, just giving you offers. But yet I have friends, like I said, who are super talented and they didn't get the right agent or they didn't, you know, get, like if I hadn't been seen for Parks, if I didn't get in there that day and audition, I guess I would still be doing what I had always done, which is go from show to show and guest spot and make a decent living and be fine. But I have friends who could, that hasn't even happened. And so I think there's probably luck involved. I'd like to think some talent. I'd like to think I bring something to the table.
Of course.
But I think just timing, I don't know. I don't know. Again, I have friends I'll see on stage and I'm like, damn, they're good. Oh my God, they're good. And then they're going to go work at wherever they're going to go work to pay their bills. Yeah. You know, it won't be through acting.
But it's also about stamina, I guess.
It is, yes, yeah. George Wendt, who was on Cheers. I don't know if you guys ever get that show.
We had it, yeah.
Yeah, we were shooting commercial together. This is 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And I remember saying to him, yeah, I'm thinking, I don't know, is this really worth being out? Because, you know, I love Chicago. My family was all there. And he said, just stick it out and it'll happen. And he was right. It was good advice. I stuck it out and it happened. So
some 9 years later.
Yeah, well, no, but even in general, I was working all the time. I just didn't. No, but even doing other stuff. I mean, I was always kind of busy, you know, again, enough to pay my bills and have a life. And but then a network show, especially one that goes for a while, you know, you get to put money away and you get to travel a little more.
Yeah, stuff. I mean, I have looked at your resume. It was fantastic before Parks and Rec also, but yeah.
Yeah, but it changes. A primetime show that is on every week that goes for 125 episodes, it changes
things. And with the following that that's...
And with the diet. Because the problem for Parks is people go, well, the ratings were never good, and they weren't, but they were.
Yeah.
Because the people who watch our show are the younger people, and they're not watching it at home on Thursday night. They were putting it on their Netflix or Hulu. Or so our audience was much bigger than we were ever given credit for. But for some reason, everyone still goes by these Nielsen ratings. I think it's ridiculous. I don't understand it. I think it's prehistoric.
It's also funny that nobody has come up with a better way. Exactly.
I know. Well, we can send, you know, we can go to Mars and Pluto and everything. We can't figure out how to get accurate ratings. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. But if I'm around young people, it's lunacy. That's who watches us. It's like the 16 to 40-year-olds. Just...
Do you get stopped every day?
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird. When it first happened, I was like, whoa, this is so weird. Now it's so normal, I think nothing of it. And people are always, always nice. I will even have people, if I'm walking down the street, if they drive by and they recognize me, they go, damn it, Jerry, or you ruined the Harvest Festival or whatever. But they're saying that out of love for the character. Yeah. So I've never dealt with, you know, you get the crazy tweet here and there from some crazy person. But no, I don't know. I've been very blessed. You know, I'm a big guy. People could be, oh, he's fat. It's always very nice what people put out there about me. So I'm very appreciative of that. And the fans are diehards. Even yesterday, we wrapped, and I had to run to the store. I was waiting for a parking space. When the people were leaving, they realized it was me behind them. They jumped out of their car to take pictures, and they go, you got to take a picture, or we're not going to move our car. I'm like, I'll happily take a picture, even whatever. So the people are always really kind.
Yeah.
Really, really kind. And it's fun. I always said, there's so many years no one gave a shit about me. It's nice that how can I be anything but nice about it, you know, because the people are so nice about it. And I don't understand, like, recently a woman, I was in Florida and at the hotel, and she came up and she started crying and stuff, and that kind of threw me, like, and she goes, just so excited. And it's kind of weird to have that effect on somebody, and I don't get it, just because I'm just this dumbass idiot that I was before Parks. And it's also very humbling. You know, for the movie Middleman, we did a Kickstarter campaign. Our goal was to raise $150,000. We already had a budget, but we wanted to make it bigger so we could do more stuff for the film. And I said, I don't know if this is going to happen. I mean, I was like the only name attached at the time and blah, blah. We made $153,000, and mostly from people who just like me from television. I mean, that's humbling.
Yeah.
Because people's money is important. That's their money.
Of course.
And they gave me their money. And they got very little out of it. Depending on what you did, you get different perks, a t-shirt or whatever. Some of them got phone calls. I had to make a whole bunch of phone calls, like 100 phone calls to people. But that's humbling. Like, wow, they did that just because they like me as an actor. It was, wow, wow. And it added $153,000 to the quality of the film. That's a lot of money.
It is,
especially on an indie.
Absolutely. You know,
it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's what you make in...
Every 2 seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah. Every 2 seconds, I make $153,000. Yeah. But, actually, what am I getting paid for this? I didn't... Is this 150... How many seconds have I been here? Because $153,000...
Actually, you have to pay us...
What?
To be on the show. Yeah. You have to talk to your people about that.
I'll get my people.
But I was wondering, because oftentimes actors have something to do on their own just because their everyday life is so depending on others. Do you have an outlet like that?
I mean, like hobbies or something?
Well,
what do you mean?
Or do you write stuff for yourself?
I wish I did. And people around me about that. I don't write. I'm more of a contributor. If I'm in a room and things are happening, then I can contribute. But I can't sit at that computer and just go, oh, boom. I can't do it.
No.
I've tried.
Yeah.
I can't do it. And there's insecurity involved. I just don't think, you know, and that screws you up in your head because I tell myself I can't do it. Well, that's silly, but that's what I do. So, yeah, I don't know. But because I, you know, people are like, oh, you're so funny. You're so off the cuff funny. I can do that, which comes back to improv, where it's just kind of comes out as we're going back and forth or whatever. But to sit at the computer and just write something, you know, because Nick Offerman, he's written 2 books now, and he's written 2 shows, theater pieces that he goes up and does. That's amazing. And part of me would love to do a one-man show, a theater show, you know, and just go up there and tell stories and stuff.
What would it be about?
About my life, I guess. The reason I say that is because I do love telling stories. So I think that would just be fun. And I do have a million stories. You know, I've been around a long time. I'm going to be 30 soon. So that's funny. You laughed at that. I don't understand that. I don't
understand. More.
I mean, there's a terrible lie on the internet that I'm 53. That's bullshit. Yeah, I'm going to be 30. I'm 26 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, but, you know, so I've been around. I've had some funny stories of just things in my life, things I've done or whatever. But I don't know how to piece them all together. I don't know how to make it fluid. So it hasn't happened. But maybe that would be what I should do. I should find a writer and sit and put a show together. That's what I should do. Because I would enjoy that. And I think because of the fan base of Parks, I think I could do that. Like as far as I could go to some small theaters and I think it would do okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
I should do that.
That would be super.
Yeah, would that pay me $53,000, $153,000 a second? Or
not sure, but...
it's all about the money.
But
it's all about the money.
But what do you do for yourself then? Or is it all work?
It's a lot of work,
yeah.
And I love it because I love my work.
But somebody has to walk the dogs, right?
Yeah, no, well, I get people to do that when I'm not there.
Okay.
I sadly had to put down one of my dogs in January. He was 11 and just sick. He had bone cancer, so that was awful. And the dog I have now, she's 13. She's having surgery tomorrow for a little cancer thing, but she's had them before, and they snip it out and stuff. So, yeah, that part sucks because, you know, when you don't have kids – your animals, you know, you become obsessive about them. But I've always been that way with animals anyway. But, you know, so I love going to movies. There's nothing I like better than, because I don't go to movies on the weekends with a million people. No, thank you. Like today I'm off. Tomorrow I go back to work on this film. And, you know, I'm doing this now. Later, I'm going to go see, finally, Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see it.
I heard it's really good.
I've heard great stuff. So, I love doing stuff like that. I'm social as far as lunches and dinners. But that being said, I love being on set. There's an old expression. I should find out who said it because I repeat it so often. But it goes, you know, if you love what you do, you never worked a day in your life. And I really believe that. And so I can say since I moved to Los Angeles in 1994, I've never worked a day in my life because I have made my living off of acting, which I love. And I'm not saying every day is peaches and cream. And
Mark Anthony.
Is that who? Mark Anthony?
I think so.
I like that. That'll stay in my head now. Thank you. Oh, computers. Isn't that something? How'd you do that? What's that thing in front of you that makes things type and things
happen? It's fantastic, right?
It's crazy. Yeah. So to me, I love being on a set. I love being on a set. A middleman, we shot 6 days, let me correct myself, 6 nights in the desert. Holy crap. But it was awesome. It was crazy and there were... little creatures, and there were things going on. And then we shot a couple days in the desert in the sun. It was 115 degrees one day on this place called Salt Lake. And you're in a car, and you're dripping sweat. And I'm like, what is going on? This is crazy. But it's also, I'm in a 1953 Oldsmobile shooting this crazy film. And like, who gets to do that? You know, there was a day on Parks. One day I was in a hot air balloon. I was being lifted by centers. It's like, this, how do you not love this?
Yeah.
There's no 2 days are the same.
No.
They are not the same. I also love with all my heart my house. And that's important.
Where is it?
Look at you trying to get a dinner invite or something. You'll never be there. No, I live in Encino, a place called Encino, California.
Encino. Okay. Yeah. Is that far off?
Nah, from here, 30 minutes, okay. 25 minutes, 30 minutes. But, you know, I'll have my private helicopter pick me up and I'll just get flown or my teleporter. Mm. You know, I'll stand there, hit the button, and just be at my house. Perfect. Because that's how I roll.
Yeah.
But it's...
Does it make you roll?
You're kind of rolling, yes. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. It works, though. Yeah. I get there. What's great about it is I am also a firm believer in you got to love where you live. It doesn't, and I don't think it has to be a big house. It doesn't have to be any, just you have to love it. Like when you walk in your door at night, it has to be the place where you go, ah, this is awesome. This is, and again, that doesn't have to be fancy, or maybe it is fancy. Whatever it is for you that you go, yeah, that. And my house is that for me. I walk in and I just love it. I love everything about it. It's nice. It's nothing crazy. It's thankfully has a pool because I live in LA. I love my little pool. I just love it. So I'm happy at home. I'm very happy at home. And when I leave for 3 months, that's going to be tough.
But how did you end up in Encino?
Just it was cheaper to buy there. And I bought a house from an actress who was on shows years ago. And I got it for it needed a lot of work. And so over the years, because I bought it way before Parks. I bought it in 03, so 6 years before Parks. And you just slowly do things as you can. You know, you get a little extra money here. Oh, maybe I can redo the bathroom. Maybe get a little extra here. Oh, I can, you know, new windows. And so that's what I did. And now I just love it. And I have no taste. Like, I have none. I can't pick colors. I can't do any of that. So fortunately, I was able to hire someone who could.
Okay.
And so that's what he did.
I was going to ask you also, do you work with goals for yourself?
Career goals?
Or life goals?
It's weird. I kind of go from job to job. So I'm just always happy to be working. Like I said earlier, I don't have the dream of my own show. Or, you know, I dream of being on a show with a group of amazing people, you know, like Parks was. I would love that to happen again. I don't know if that ever will. I try to kind of be a decent person in life. I try to not be an idiot. I'm sure I fail constantly, but I try to be decent, so that's a goal to keep that going. But I've said to my family, like, if God forbid tomorrow, you know, I walk out and a Mack truck hits me or whatever, I had a hell of a ride, and I literally have no regrets. I mean, I'm sure I have regrets about certain conversations I've had with people where I might have hurt some feelings and stuff, but as far as, like, big, crazy life regrets, I don't have any. And sadly, my parents passed away young. My dad was 57. My mom was 74. But she did get a taste of, it was so supportive. And so she, over the years, she saw me on different TV shows. But she did get to see Parks.
Okay.
She got to see me on Parks. She got to go to red carpets. She got to have a limousine pick her up. And I loved all that. I loved that she got to see that before she died. So I don't know. I'm pretty content.
That's nice to hear.
What? Of course, when you stop rolling, I'm going to start screaming about what I demand and what I expect and, my true life goals.
But can I ask you, what's your biggest problem?
Wow. Probably insecurity as an actor. That's a problem. I think most actors deal with that. You never think you're good enough. But problem in life, you know, I'm probably oversensitive. Like, I can obsess about family, like, oh, they're getting older, this one's happening, you know, because stuff happens, life goes on, and people get sick, and hopefully get better, and then you have animals, and they get sick, and sometimes they don't get better, and so, just day-to-day stuff that everybody worries about, you know, I will say, the old expression about money doesn't buy happiness, and it absolutely doesn't buy happiness, but it buys a little peace of mind, so I don't have those worries that I used to have, like, how the hell am I paying rent this month, or oh my God, my car just, it needs new tires. How the hell am I going to come up with the money to buy new tires? Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about that. And that's awesome.
Of course.
That's awesome. But yeah, that doesn't mean happiness, but it takes away some stress. And believe me, I'm no millionaire, but I'm, you know, comfortable. And it's, at this point, I'm still continuing to work steady. So hopefully it stays that way. And, you know, I'll have a good pension and all the stuff that you want, you know, so who knows if I'll be around. I never know. I never know.
Would you like to recommend something?
Yes. Don't, I'm screaming this into this microphone. Don't go to a pet shop and buy an animal. Adopt. These animals, they're about to be killed in the shelters. Please. There's so many amazing animals that sit in these cages that need a home, and yet people are spending $800,000 on a purebred. Why? Why are you just to say it's a purebred? And I'll also say this, and this is not scientific, but from my experience, the purebreds end up with more health issues and more. You just get a mutt. Just get a mutt that's going to love you to death. Just get a mutt.
That's good advice. Thank you. Who do you think I should interview?
You know who I love? He is such a good person. And more important than his success, more important than his Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel is awesome. I have seen him involved in things that people don't even know about that are just amazing. And he's the real deal. So I see Jimmy Kimmel.
Thank you so much for your time.
This was great. Thank you. Where's my money? Where's my fucking money? Chris, what? Where's my... you better turn that thing off. I don't want people to think I'm an asshole. Come on. Where's my... I want that fucking check now!
All right, Jim O'Hare. And since those great years in Parks and Recreation are over, I really look forward to see what his next project will be. If you're interested to keep up with him, follow him on Twitter. He is at Jim O'Hare there. This episode was edited by Lovisa Olsson, and technical as well as editorial help came from Thomas Kulshage. My LA crew was 16 Mile Talent. I love you guys. And this is the last episode of Varvet International for the time being. But at some point, I hope to wake this fine project up again. So if you want to get in contact, you can reach me at international@triumph.se, TRIUMF.SE. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Christoph Triumph saying bye-bye. Hej då.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.